so God's wisdom is manifested in the church in the way that Beethoven's masterful mind is manifested in the pieces that he plays, or that a sculptor's wisdom and craft is seen when we examine the sculpture. He didn't teach me how to take this rock and make something beautiful out of it, but when I see it, I go, that is wisdom itself. That is what the church is. And the heavenly rulers and principalities and authorities look and they see the church and they say, this is the wisdom of God. They see it manifested in the church of Jesus Christ. So that was our text. Our doctrine, which we left off last week with is this, and that is the church is the preeminent manifestation of God's wisdom. The church is the preeminent manifestation of God's wisdom. We noted how there's no nation that this can be said of. We don't say that a particular nation is the preeminent manifestation of God's wisdom, which means we don't say that the nation of Israel is the preeminent manifestation of God's wisdom. We say it is the church that is the preeminent manifestation of God's wisdom. We look at wonderful and good things like the family, and we do see God's wise design, and we do see so much good and beauty, but we don't say of the family it is the preeminent manifestation of God's wisdom. We say this of the church and the church alone. And I want to give, as I said last week, if you weren't convinced by the way we walked through the text last week, now I have six reasons why you should believe that the church is the preeminent manifestation of God's wisdom. And this is where we pick up from last week. So what's the first reason why we should believe that the church is the preeminent manifestation of God's wisdom? Reason number one is that the church originates from an untraceable plan. The church originates from an untraceable plan. We noted last week, all intellectual creatures are able to see the church. This isn't just about mankind. This isn't just about us perceiving the church and saying this is the wisdom of God. This is about the angelic realm perceiving the church of God and saying this is wisdom, the wisdom of God made manifest. So not just humans, but angels see this and say this is the wisdom of God on display. But it's not just that man couldn't see this unfold. Angels couldn't either. Angels were searching for this, seeking to understand this hidden wisdom of God. And it is so wise that only God knows it and can make it known. So the church originates from an untraceable plan. The angels couldn't detect it. Man couldn't detect it. And we tend to realize that when a wisdom is more rare, it is more perfect or more glorious. So by way of illustration, a doctor who has a particular wisdom to handle rare cases is considered a highly skilled person. You know, we've experienced this a little bit, as I know many others have as well, but just speaking from personal experience, you know, we've had some health issues with our youngest daughter. We took her to our general practitioner, who is great. They do a great job. We love where we go. And they had not heard of or seen the condition that our daughter had. So we had to go up the chain. We had to go to a children's hospital, not just a place that took care of all kinds of people. We had to go to a hospital that specializes in taking care of children. And when we got to a hospital that specializes in taking care of children, it's not just that we went to that hospital. We had to go to a particular department. We have to go to the urology department. We have to go to a specific place where they can help us fix this problem. And we noted, we were doing some research, on top children's hospitals in the department ranked by their, or in the United States, ranked by their urology department, and Riley Children's Hospital is ranked third in the nation. The surgery that our daughter needs, they do 10 of them a year. That's the third ranking department in the nation does 10 of these surgeries a year. That is rare. We need someone who has done this surgery many times. We don't get the opportunity to do this surgery many times. They do it 10 times a year. But this is the type of wisdom we needed. We needed to go find someone who was a specialist who understood the intricacies of the body, but not just the intricacies of the body, the intricacies of a child's body. And not just the intricacies of the child's body, but a specific part in the child's body. And not just that, but how to fix it and repair it and when to do it and all the steps that need to be taken in order to get to that particular time. And when we see the rareness of the amount of people who are able to help fix these kinds of problems. You say, wow, these people really know what they're doing. Now we talk about the church. This is not, you know, angels couldn't trace out this plan. Man couldn't trace out this plan. God and God alone has this wisdom and manifests this wisdom. This is not something that has been passed on to him. Even skilled doctors, wise doctors, even people who are the wisest in their craft have climbed up the ladder of wisdom. They've made progress to a certain point. God has made no progress. God has not climbed up a ladder. God is not a few rungs up the ladder. The ladder comes down from God. He is wisdom. He did not climb up something. He did not achieve something. This is something that was hidden. So let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 2. Should be just to your left of Ephesians, a few books. If you've hit Romans, you've gone too far. 1 Corinthians chapter 2. And look at the way, I know we've examined this text a few times in Ephesians, but let's look at it through the lens that we've been examining in this particular doctrine about this untraceable plan of God. Ephesians, or 1 Corinthians chapter 2, pardon me, verse 6. Yet we do not speak wisdom among those who are mature, a wisdom, however, not of this age, nor of the rulers of this age who are passing away. But we speak of God's wisdom in a mystery, the hidden wisdom which God predestined before the ages to our glory. The wisdom which none of the rulers of this age has understood. For if the rulers of this age had understood it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. So here, Paul is saying that the rulers of the age did not understand the wisdom of God unfolding. In Ephesians, he's saying the angels did not either. No one was able to trace out this hidden wisdom of God, which means that it is coming from an untraceable plan which reveals the marvelous wisdom of God. So the church is the wisdom of God that couldn't be traced out by rational creatures, men or angels. No rational being besides the uncreated one possessed or foresaw this wisdom. Not man. Man who brought destruction upon humanity. We could not perceive nor develop the plan that would bring about our redemption. Nor the angels who turned away from God and led men into sin. They could not see it either. So the devils, or the devil and his angels, could not foresee it. But not even those angels who had not fallen could not trace out this marvelous wisdom of God revealed in time. Both kinds of created beings, man and angel, brought destruction in the world. And even those who did not, none could foresee nor plan nor develop this wise plan of God. It is the wisdom hidden in God, the most rare wisdom, making it the most glorious and precious wisdom. And this reveals, as we've talked about, developing this already, what's known as God's aseity, that God is from himself. God's wisdom is from himself. He is the wisdom with which he is wise. There's not a wisdom above him, not a wisdom below him. We talked about that a little bit last week. Go ahead and turn to the book of Daniel. And our scripture reading from last week was from Daniel chapter 2. You have those big prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, then Daniel. And the much smaller books that follow. But in Daniel chapter 2, look at verses 20 through 23 with me. We read this last week. Daniel said, verse 20, "Let the name of God be blessed forever and ever, for wisdom and power belong to him." These are not things that we say of others. We receive wisdom. We receive power. God doesn't receive it. God doesn't. He just is wisdom and power. It belongs to him. He gives it. It is he, the God with whom wisdom and power belong. It is he who changes the times and the epochs. He removes kings and establishes kings. He gives wisdom to wise men and knowledge to men of understanding. It is he who reveals the profound and hidden things. All these things that we've been talking about in Ephesians. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and power. Even now you have made known to me what we requested of you, for you have made known to us the king's matter. And God is the ultimate king, and he is making known the ultimate matters. And he is making them known to Paul, just as he made them known to Daniel. And then they are manifesting or declaring this wisdom of God. If you go down to verse 30 of Daniel chapter 2. But as for me, this mystery has not been revealed to me for any wisdom residing in me, more than in any other living man, but for the purpose of making the interpretation known to the king, that you may understand the thoughts of your mind. So God is the all-wise one who gives wisdom and makes wisdom known. He does not receive it from another. Daniel receives it. God does not receive it. Likewise, Paul reasons in Romans chapter 16, verse 27. Romans 16, 27. The Apostle Paul says, to the only wise God. This is our benediction that we've been using for the first few months of the year. But to the only wise God. God alone is the one who is wisdom itself. So, the church reveals the uniqueness of God's wisdom as one who has not received it from another, as the one who has wisdom in and of himself. He is not the one who has climbed the path of wisdom, but is the fount of wisdom. All wisdom flows from God. Any wisdom that we see in creation is from God himself. He is not up the ladder, but the fount of all wisdom. And so this is that doctrine of simplicity that we talked about. But also, the church reveals the freeness of God's wisdom, demonstrating independence. The fact that this plan is an untraceable plan reveals the freeness of God. We couldn't have predicted it because in no way was God forced to do it. No one could have forced God to act this way. God's character and being doesn't necessitate that he establish the church. It doesn't necessitate that he bring about redemption. So nothing about God makes it so that God must establish this marvelous institution of redemption known as the church. And no creature could have forced God to redeem in this way. Angels couldn't have forced it. Humanity could not have forced it. Not only could we not have forced it, no angel nor human could have suggested that God act in this way. After the fall of Adam, we don't see saying, excuse me, here's God, how I think you should act with this sin in the world. I think you should fix it all. And so, I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm going to suggest that you redeem humanity. No, what creature could have suggested it? What creature could approach the Creator and make suggestions when the Creator is the one who has been transgressed? He is the holy, infinite, righteous God. He is the one who is the judge. And when sin enters into the world, there's no suggestion that any creature could make except it would be totally wise and just for you to just wipe it all out. No creature could ask for the church. No creature could ask for redemption. No creature could go to God and propose and say, here's what I think would be wise for you to do, God. Redemption is from the free decision of God to redeem a people to God, through God, and by God. And it is in this goodness and freeness of the act that makes it untraceable. It's like when you have a generous gift from a benevolent donor who owes you absolutely nothing. And your thought is, I could not have seen this coming. But the difference between God and the benevolent donor is that you have sinned against God. You are owed something, and it's not this benevolent gift. And this is why no creature could trace out this plan of God. And that is why, reason number one, the church is the preeminent wisdom of God, because the church originates in an untraceable plan, meaning it's a rare wisdom that no creature could have had, no creature could have forced upon God, and no creature could have suggested. It comes from the simple, wise God who is wisdom in himself, who is absolutely free. Reason number two, the church exists because of a singular and irrevocable plan. The church exists because of a singular and irrevocable plan, and this is why it manifests the preeminent wisdom of God. We all know that a singular and irrevocable plan is wiser than multiple and changing plans. If someone is continually changing their plans, you don't go, man, this person has lots of wisdom. Look at all the plans that they've changed, that they started, and they had to abandon, and then they've started doing all these new plans. These are delightful. Clearly, they're manifesting themselves as one who has wisdom. And that's different than someone who maybe responds to plans, someone who has developed a plan, and then something has broken down outside of their control, outside of their ability to foresee it, and then they can fix the plan and keep their main plan or target going. But that's responding to problems that could not have been accounted for. Someone who does that, we definitely would call that man wise. But a man who has to change his plan every single time he encounters a hiccup is not a wise person. When we look at the church, we see its head. When we see its head, we see the Lamb that was slain before the foundation of the world. We see verse 9 of Ephesians chapter 3. And to bring to light what is the administration of the mystery, which for ages has been hidden in God, who created all things. And in verse 11, this was in accordance with His eternal purpose. From the very beginning, the church was the eternal purpose of God in creation. This was not a plan B. This was not a response to something. This was not, I started with one plan in Adam and that didn't work. Then I started with Abraham. Let's hope we can get started. Actually, let's go to Noah. Then there's Noah. Give him a new creation type thing. We'll see how that, well, that didn't work. Well, maybe we can make a whole people. Let's start with Abraham and then maybe we'll give them a land and we'll give them Moses and then maybe we'll give them kings. And that didn't work. Well, now let's try the church. No. This was the church was the eternal purpose of God, His singular and irrevocable plan. His plan from the beginning was redemption in the Son of God to the glory of the Godhead. And so we see Israel as a nation is not the preeminent wisdom of God. It precedes the church, but is designed to lead up to the church. It is the new covenant and the new covenant community. That is the marvelous wisdom of God. Everything in the Old Testament is leading up to this. When we arrive to this, we declare this is the preeminent wisdom. It is this that the angels longed to see. It is this that the principalities and authorities in the heavenly places see the manifest wisdom of God. It is in the church of Jesus Christ. So it's not that Israel has been put on hold during this time to manifest this preeminent wisdom and then to go back. No. That all leads up to this. Pointing forward is part of that multifaceted wisdom. And here when it leads us up to the church, we say, ah, this is the preeminent wisdom of God. No other institution, tribe, people, or plan that centers as the singular and irrevocable plan of God. That is reserved for the church and the church alone. Third, the church arises from a reprehensible condition. The church arises from a reprehensible condition. This is the third reason why the church is the preeminent wisdom of God. Wisdom is seen most clearly in the case of moral confusion. Turn to 1 Kings chapter 3. We're not saying that wisdom requires moral confusion. What we're saying is that wisdom is seen most clearly by creatures in the face of moral confusion. It's kind of like, is the sun shining brightly whether you exist or not? Absolutely. But when you walk out of a dark room into the sunlight, those who've been in the darkness have a hard time seeing more than those who have been out in the sunlight for a while. The sun is still shining. The sun is still shining brightly. We just perceive its brightness greater when we walked out of darkness. Let's turn to 1 Kings chapter 3. And we'll see an instance of this and try to play it out. You know the story well. This is the story of King Solomon where he says he's going to divide the child, right? And let's look at this. 1 Kings chapter 3, beginning in verse 16. Then two women who were harlots. Let's stop right there. We could avoid this whole situation very easily. You want to know how to avoid not being in the situation that Solomon has to deal with right here? Step one, don't be a harlot. It's very simple. But but they're harlots already. You can't go back and undo that. That's who they are. It's easy to look and say, all this could have been avoided by not being a harlot. But what do you do when there are harlots? Then two women who were harlots came to the king and stood before him. The one woman said, "Oh my lord, this woman and I live in the same house." Let's stop there again. You know what's wise? Not living with harlots. Turns out, they're not the most ethical people in the world. So step two, you want to not fall into the situation? Step one, don't be a harlot. Step two, don't live with harlots. But that's not the situation that Solomon is facing. He can't just say, here's how I'm going to fix this. Don't be a harlot. Well, but we are. Okay, well, don't live together. But we do. How is Solomon supposed to respond? How would you respond? It's very easy to say, oh, we could have avoided this whole situation. But the problem is, we are in this situation. So harlot and I gave birth in the same house to a child while she was in the house. It happened on the third day after I gave birth to this this woman also gave birth to a child. And we were together. There was no stranger in the house with us, only the two of us in the house. This woman's son died in the night because she lay on it. She arose in the middle of the night and took my son from beside me while your maidservant slept and laid him in her bosom and laid her dead son in my bosom. When I arose in the morning to nurse my son, behold, he was dead. But when I looked at him carefully in the morning, behold, he was not my son, whom I had born. Then the other woman said, "No, for the living one is my son, and the dead one is your son." But the first woman said, "No, for the dead one is your son, and the living one is my son." Thus they spoke before the king. Again, we could figure out how to avoid this situation. Don't be a harlot. Don't live with harlots. Or if you have a kid, maybe get your own place. But a child has died. How do you figure out whose child this one is? And you know how the story ends. There's not a point in going further into the story. But what we see is the wisdom of Solomon is put on display not by saying, if you had not done X, Y, and Z, we wouldn't be in this situation. We see the wisdom of Solomon in the face of moral confusion. We see the wisdom of Solomon in the face of sin. Because you probably wouldn't know what to do in that situation. I wouldn't know what to do in that situation. And Solomon's able to contrive a situation in which it's clearly revealed who the mother of the child is. And that's why we say he is wise. Not because he lectured them on what they should not have done, although I'm sure that could have been part of it, but because he knew how to handle a situation where things were already broken. It's much easier to build something kind of clean and untouched. A lot of people want to start new things because it's easier to start something new than to fix what's right behind me. The world has fallen into sin. In Adam's fall, sinned we all. The devil and his angels have opposed God and Christ. Mankind is in sinful rebellion against God. And we see God with a greater wisdom than Solomon act to bring about redemption in the church of Jesus Christ. So as we see the church in its reprehensible condition, we see the church as an institution, or we see the world in its reprehensible condition. We see the church as an institution of redemption and restoration. We see the church as composed of those who were part of the brokenness of the world that we brought into the world through sin. And we were redeemed out of this world to live unto God, which is what we were designed for. That which is broken has been repaired, and it has been repaired and restored in the church of Jesus Christ. And that is why the church is the preeminent wisdom of God, because the occasion for the church is a reprehensible condition. Fourth, the church reflects moral purity. The church reflects moral purity. Wisdom is contrasted to folly, and the church does not reflect folly, but the moral goodness found in wisdom. We talked about ordered institutions. There are many other ordered religions. There are times where we can look at other religions and we can see order. There are times we can look at other religions and we can see a certain understanding. But then we see that they don't aim for the right ends. They don't know how to achieve the right ends. This is not true in the church. The church is the wisdom of God, and as such, it demonstrates moral purity. Meaning, in the church, we see the preeminent wisdom of God. So by way of example or illustration, You don't take marriage advice from someone who's on their seventh marriage. Someone comes to you and says, "Hey, you're gonna get married. Look, I've been married 7 times, divorced 6 times. I know a lot about marriage. Let me tell you what it's like. I'm on my 7th one. Or you have someone who says, "We've been married for 65 years. Just one marriage, 65 years. Which one has the wisdom? You want to hear, you want to go to the one who's been married for 65 years to one person and say, "Tell me what a good marriage looks like and what I should be aiming for." You don't go to the one who says, "Been divorced 6 times, I'm on my 7th marriage," and say, "Ah, clearly you have figured it out. Help me understand." No, we say, that sounds like folly. But we see in the church wisdom and moral purity. We see it in God. We sang it this morning. I forget the words, God the just is satisfied. He did not bypass his justice to be satisfied. He did not bring satisfaction apart from justice. And he did not just bring justice. He could have just brought justice, destroyed everything. No, the just is satisfied, not in the blood of bulls and goats, not even in the blood of another human, but in the blood of a federal head. And this blood is human blood, but it's blood that belongs to one who is God. And although Christ hung on a tree, and that's a cursed way to die, he did not live a cursed life. He led a pure life, a morally upright life. His life was perfection, such that he comes to trial, and Pilate's wife is like, "You need to let this man go." What is declared of Christ after being tried? "Find nothing of which this man is guilty." Moral purity in Christ. But it's not just that God is just and satisfied, and that the Father has a wise decree, and that the church has the wisdom of God as its head, and the church has the spirit of wisdom in and among her. We actually see it then overflow into the church itself as man becomes a worshiper of God. As man learns to live unto God. Where does man learn how to worship God? Where does man learn how to live unto God? Where is man taught the fear of the Lord, which is the beginning of wisdom? In the church of Jesus Christ. And so the church takes these people from a reprehensible condition, brings them in by God's perfect purity in Christ Jesus' impeccable human life, and then transforms these sinners into worshipers of God. And this is why the church is the preeminent wisdom of God, because it reflects moral purity. The fifth reason: the church endures through tireless persecution. The church endures through tireless persecution. Those things which are folly are quickly destroyed and perished, but wisdom endures and is vindicated. Something that is built on the sand does not last. You have the wise man. Where did he build his house? On the rock. Where does the foolish man build his house? On the sand. And what happens? The rain came and the wind blew, and the man whose house was on the sand was destroyed. Why? Because he didn't build it right. But the house that endured was the house that was built upon the rock. Wisdom is able to endure through difficult seasons. Wisdom is able to endure through challenges. Wisdom is not like chaff that is blown around by the wind. Wisdom is like the oak trees, the redwood trees that have taken a long time to come, but are immovable. That's what the church is like. There's lots of solutions quickly after the fall for humanity's problems. Just we talked about them last Sunday night in Genesis chapter 3. Adam and Eve quickly try to resolve their problems. And God provides a solution, but that solution is like a tree. It's going to take a long time to fully get here. But in the fullness of time, it blooms and it grows big and strong. And we see in the fullness of time Christ. But confessions of faith, founding documents, designs of homes, if these things don't last more than a few years, we say that's folly. But if they last forever, we say that is wisdom. If they endure through storms, if they endure through floods, if they endure through pressure, we say then clearly those were built with wisdom. Listen to the words of Christ in Matthew chapter 11, verse 19. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, "Behold, a gluttonous man and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners." Yet wisdom is vindicated by her deeds. The wisdom of God is vindicated by the church, and the church's ability to endure the gates of hell shall not prevail against the church. And we see that the church has endured materially. In other words, those people who are part of the church have endured. Cain sought to kill the righteous seed. And many who have followed in Satan's steps, have followed in Cain's steps, and have sought to persecute and kill and behead and destroy and saw in two and burn and banish God's people. But you can't. Do not fear him who kills body. You behead the saints, they're in the presence of their Maker. They'll be reunited with their body. This plan cannot be foiled. It cannot be destroyed. The church has endured materially. The people of God have always endured and will always endure, even through death. But the church has also endured formally as an institution. The church in heaven as the church triumphant. The church on earth as the church militant has and will endure. And the church has endured in face of the greatest foe, folly personified, Satan himself. The church endures through tireless persecution, and this is why the church manifests the preeminent wisdom of God. The final reason is that the church pictures the most glorious end. The church pictures the most glorious end. Wisdom is the proper ordering of things to a good end. So that which most clearly reflects the end, most clearly reflects wisdom. And so you can see something being built. Imagine watching something that takes time to build or develop, like a painting or a sculpture. See a man take a rock, take his hammer and a chisel. With the first few strikes, you have no idea what he's doing. You see the painter take up his brush and begin to paint. With the first few strokes, you really don't know what's happening. But there comes a time in that painting or in that sculpting where you get towards the end and you say, "Oh, I see what's happening now. I get it." And you're not quite there yet, but now you know what it is. The church is that. The church is, I see where this is going. Where is this going? Corporate worship of the redeemed saints of God, enjoying the blessed presence of God for all eternity. There is nothing closer to that than this. What is happening right here, where we worship, when we worship God, and we ascend to the heavenly Jerusalem, this is as close as you could possibly get to what eternity is going to look like. And that's why this manifests the wisdom of God, because we're right there, we're on the cusp of the end, where this is the closest picture you can get. There's not going to be a more clear picture of eternity than this. And this is why the church manifests the preeminent wisdom of God, because the church pictures the most glorious end, the blessed vision of God with the people of God for all eternity. So, that's our doctrine. Hopefully, now, after exploring the text last week and explaining the doctrine this week, you are convinced that the church is the preeminent manifestation of God's wisdom. Now, living in light of that, we talked last week about seeking entrance into the church, the importance of forsaking the path of folly, building your house on the sand, and that sand just is not Christ. Whatever is not Christ is the sand. All other ground that is not Christ is sinking sand. The rock is Christ himself. Building your foundation on the very wisdom of God, the second person of the Trinity, the mediator, the God-man, that is wise. Pursue Christ. Seek entrance into the church, which is that manifest wisdom of God. That was last week, a little bit more this week, but another use, another application. We ought to marvel at God's wisdom. We ought not to merely be instructed in the church. It is good for us to be instructed in the church. We need to come. We need to receive the preaching of the word. We need to enjoy and receive the sacraments. We need to sing songs and we need to pray. Absolutely. We are taught in the church, but we want to kind of take a step back a little bit sometimes. And we want to see the church like the angels see the church. I think that's a good thing for us to do. Remember, the angels are not here in the pews being instructed by me as I'm teaching right now. The angels don't need me to instruct them. God instructs them, but God instructs them with that institution, the church. So we ought to try to take a step back and try to see this marvelous institution, not merely as Trinity Reformed Baptist Church, but as this marvelous institution of all the redeemed saints across space and across time, and take a step back and say, ah, this is the wisdom of God. We're not just learning from God by hearing Word of God preached through his pastors and through his teachers. We're taking a step back and looking at the very work of God itself and trying to examine it the way angels do and seeing this is the marvelous wisdom of God unfolding throughout redemption. The third use, seek entrance, marvel at God's wisdom. Third, see the church as the center of God's plan. See the church as the center of God's plan. If the church is the preeminent wisdom of God, then we need to adopt something like ecclesiocentrism. You've heard of heliocentrism and geocentrism. You know, was it the sun or the earth that's at the center? The church is what is at the center of God's plans. The world exists for the church. God is unfolding and manifesting his great and glorious and perfect wisdom. And that wisdom has a center, and that center is the church. And so we need to adopt a mindset of ecclesiocentrism. If this is true, then how much more should we give ourselves to the church? How much more should we give ourselves to her gospel, her pattern of sound words, her sacraments, her membership, her covenant? And in doing so, we conclude that all other institutions do not manifest the wisdom of God as the church has done. Which means parachurch ministries are not the center of God's wisdom and unfolding plan. The church is. And so our focus and energy and efforts need to reflect this view of ecclesiocentrism that I believe is offered to us here in Ephesians chapter 3. Fourth use, ask God for wisdom. If God is this God who is as he is, and as we have described him as the one who is just wisdom, as the one who has not received wisdom, as the one who has not pulled wisdom into himself from another, as he has not had one to teach him. He is the teacher of wisdom, the giver of wisdom, the fount of wisdom. And we look at the church, we have to say, this is the most perfect wisdom. And if this is the most perfect wisdom, then we ought to go to the one who made it and ask him for wisdom. If anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask of God who gives to all men generously. James chapter 1, verse 5. So we have to humble ourselves and acknowledge, I am not the one who is wise. I have wisdom, but not as much as I should. I need wisdom more than I even realize. A wise person realizes he doesn't have the wisdom that he needs. The arrogant person thinks he has the wisdom that he needs. The wise man hits his knees and prays and asks that the Lord would give him wisdom. Wisdom to understand the order of things. If we're going to ask God for wisdom, what should we ask God for wisdom for? We should ask God that we would know how things are ordered. What is the relationship between things? What is the relationship between me and employer? What is the relationship between me and children? The relationship between me and church? The relationship between me, children, me, husband, me, wife? What is the order? What is a husband? What is the thing which I'm ordered to so that I may act with understanding? And in acting with understanding, that I may understand the proper ends that I ought to be reaching in my education, in my work, in my parenting, in my home. Ask God for wisdom, not just about the church, but about all things, for he is the fount of wisdom. Finally, trust the God of wisdom. We want a knowledge of future things, often. That's often what we want. But that is not the path of creaturely wisdom. There are ways that we can acquire knowledge, and knowledge that we can acquire that will, in fact, ruin us. There's much that has been gained in terms of medical knowledge through Nazi experiments. They were not wise. The method of pursuing wisdom was not in a proper order, not understanding the nature of things, and not acting with understanding. There may be true things that were learned, but the manner was not wise. But it's not just the ways that we come about wisdom, it's the wisdom that we come to learn. You know this if you've seen children. There are some things that children just ought not to know. There are some components of knowledge that ought not to be communicated to them. That will not make them wise. That will actually bring destruction upon them. So there are wrong ways for us to pursue the knowledge of things that are future. And if we had the knowledge of things that were future, I think that would probably destroy us as well. It's not for us to know. So we have to be careful about the ways in which we seek to attain wisdom and the things of which we seek to know. To search for knowledge by means of folly will ruin us. And to acquire knowledge that is not for us is folly. And it arrives at ruinous folly, not at the good ends of wisdom. So where are we left? The wise person trusts the God of wisdom, seeking to obey His ways and allowing Him to bring to pass whatever He seeks to bring to pass. And so we ask ourselves, has God not proved Himself to you over and over? Has He not proved Himself to you in the church, the preeminent manifestation of His wisdom? Has He not proved Himself to you in His wise decree, as we see the way things have unfolded? And so how does this relate to us in time? Well, we look at those things that are future. I don't know what it holds, but I look back and I see the foundation of the Church of Jesus Christ, the preeminent wisdom of God. I look forward, and what do I see? Something that is really close to resembling what is happening right now, but perfected. And so we trust the God of wisdom. We look back and see the cross. We look forward and we see the consummation of all things. And we do so from a really blessed position as people who are members of this glorious institution, are people who are on this side of that preeminent manifestation of God's wisdom. What a blessing it is to live here and now. These things which angels long to look at and see, we see, we know. These things which saints of old wish to know and understand, we understand in time as the preeminent wisdom of God has been manifested. Let us pray.